found during those inspections and investigations not to be complying with the regulations, they are charged either criminally or in terms of our code of conduct, and they are prosecuted as such, that is in terms of the code of conduct or in terms of the NPA prosecution, where they are a non-compliant amount to a criminal offense. The program consists of three sub-programs, one being the enforcement, which basically deals with the investigations with the view to open criminal cases. And the second sub-program is compliance, which ensures that to the audit inspections to ensure that the security businesses and security officers comply with the minimum standards that's provided in the code of conduct. And the third program is legal services and prosecution. This is the program that where, the sub-program where if the non-compliance has been identified, they are brought, they are prosecuted by this sub-program. A strategic overview of an annual target. The first strategic goal is to ensure excellent safety in the security industry. The strategic outcome is increased monitoring and investigation of security service providers to ensure that they comply with existing legislation. Our key performance indicators are a number of inspections that are conducted on the businesses. Our baseline for the previous year was 3,520, and our current target is 3,870 going to the outer years. The number of inspections conducted on security officers, our baseline was 20,244, and our current target is 2,270. On the percentage of investigation finalized in respect of non-compliant service providers, we want to achieve 50%. With our baseline was 50% for the previous year, and our current target is we want to see 60% of businesses comply. This 60% will be taken from the number of inspections that we have conducted. So out of the 3,870 that we plan to conduct, we want to at least come up with 60% as compliant. Number of criminal cases that are open, in terms of percentage, our baseline for last year was 70%. We want to increase, targeted that to 75%. And going forward, 80%, 85. Number of non-compliant sales providers prosecuted this year is 70% against the 70% baseline that we had last year. We also want, to achieve the strategic outcome, we also want to review our law enforcement strategy that is in place. This is a new indicator. We will review the law enforcement. And we will continuously review the following year to test whether the one that we are going to come up with in this year still meet the challenges of the following years. Still on the problem two, the strategic outcome, our second strategic outcome is security businesses that are licensed to possess firearms in the private security industry are fully accounted for those firearms. This is one of the concerns that was raised by the committee previously, that there are a number of firearms is in the hands of the security business, but it is not clear how they are accounted for. We have set these key performance indicators that we will inspect. Among the inspections that will be conducted, we'll ensure that 900 of those inspections are businesses that are using firearms or that are licensed to carry firearms. Because in most instances, we will find that the business applied for firearms, say, 5 years ago, on the basis that they've got the contract, say, with Transnet, which requires that they be in possession of firearms. Three, four years down the line, that contract comes to an end. The question, what happens to those firearms? We want to, during this inspection, we will then generate the reports and provide it to the SAPS to take appropriate steps in that regard. The other strategic income is increased compliance to minimum standards of occupation of occupation conduct of security service provider. Our security service providers are broken down into businesses and individuals. On the security business, we want to ensure that the businesses that we inspect, 60% of them do comply to the code of conduct, as well as 60% of the security officers also do comply to that level of 60%. Basically, what one looks at the inspection of the security officers is to ensure that they are, for example, uniform, they are in compliance of the prescribed regulation, which is regulation 13. It is during these individual inspections where we manage to identify companies, for instance, that are not registered, because they will be employing those people, and when we inspect the individual, one of the compliance questionnaires, which company are you linked to? Are you linked to that particular company? Registered with that company? Is that company registered? Then we manage to identify those non-compliance from the individuals, but identify the non-compliance by the businesses. Quarterly targets, basically we've broken down the figures that are provided by four. To reach our quarterly target, then that will be all from the law enforcement. I will then hand over to the Deputy Director, Communication, Registration and Training for Program 3.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I think we will go now to questions for Program 1 and 2, and then we will, after that, go to Program 3. Two questions from my side, and then I'll give other members also an opportunity. It's with regard to the APP, the 12-14-15 APP. Now, in the 2013-14 APP, there were a detailed breakdown of revenue estimates. For example, annual fees, business fees, sundry income, training income, fine income, registration fees, penalties, and so on. Now, these were not included in the current APP. If we can just give an indication maybe for the rationale for that, why was it not included? The second issue is also a legacy issue. The previous committee asked specific questions regarding the 40 million at that stage investment fund of the institution. Maybe just to give an update, what is the status of that investment fund? What is the gross, some at the stage and where is it invested? Just to get an indication of that and who's overseeing that. That's the two questions from my side. Then Honorable Malabatsi, Honorable Mula, Honorable Kalabana.
Thank you, Chair. How do you hope to, that's Program 1, how do you hope to reduce the bad debt if you have committed the target for the biannual review? My second question is on how do you think that the expenditure of administration program that is reported lower in the APP than in the ENE? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. My question is, one, I heard them talking about the training. I want to know that, have you obtained an accreditation of training?
Thank you. Talking about the training, have all your inspectors and I've been trained in the firearms control act. That was a big one. Speaking of which, the firearms audit that you were involved in, what is the status of that? Has it been completed? That was an issue from last year, as I recall. The Private Security Industry Levies Act of 2002, has this been now enforced? At one stage we were waiting for it to die of old age. It just was ignored completely. I want to know the status there. And finally, I still don't quite understand. I know you explained, and I just want you to try again for my blonde mind. The issue of your officers. Now, you bought Arcadia, it was condemned, you moved somewhere else, but someone won't let you sell Arcadia, or it's a whole huge saga. But you've ended up owning a building and leasing a building, and is this all public works drama, or who's got the problem here? Because I know, as I recall, this was all done without the minister's okay. So everybody was in trouble about that. So just try and clarify for me the exact position today in relation to the two buildings you're involved with. Thank you.
Honourable Babisha.
Thank you, Chairperson. You have indicated that companies, they applied for licenses for firearms when they got a contract, and after that you hand the responsibility to the police to see where the firearms are. And according to my experience, a lot of firearms are in the hands of the citizens of South Africa, using them for murder, for all those things. Have you not once come across an incident where the firearms that were used by the company that has expired in the murder case, implicated in the murder case by the police? Because you might find that I said that police are doing an effective job to capture back or to find out precisely what is happening to the firearms.
We'll take those questions and then go to the second round. Over to Sira.
So, with the final section. With regards to the investment fund, you know that in terms of the PSMA, you need treasury approval to carry over any surpluses that you have at the end of an audit period. So for you to then have a non-distributable reserve, because in essence an investment fund will become that, Treasury must give the go-ahead. So at the moment it's shown in the cash flow. If you look at the cash flow era for the past 4 years, they've been retaining close to 20 million every year as some sort of an investment, but then Treasury approving them to hold on to it, but not to rather create a fund as such, in the sense of, because a fund is with a couple of risks. So if the fund is not performing well, then you're going to have those challenges of not actually now going to Treasury and requesting for money. So they didn't give approval for that to be something that you carry over, but rather something that you manage and make more the interest. So what we do now is that we put the money in a call account and we put it in the money market account and make a lot of interest out of that to sustain ourselves. And then with regards to the variance between the E&E and the ATP, you'd understand that the E&E is an estimate of national expenditure. So at the time when you did the estimate, and at the end, the two will differ, because one was an estimate and you were projecting that certain things might happen and they didn't happen. So when you then come to the baseline, you use your actual as a guide. So that's why you use it with a difference. With regards to the baby, what we have done now is we've introduced a new system where we review our debtors on a monthly basis for affordability, for liquidation issues, so that we don't sit at the end of the financial year with a huge backlog of debtors that we needed to have written off or we needed to have started chasing earlier on. And You've also introduced the debt collectors to be the ones that chase the debtors that are not paying, because what we find is that some companies don't become bad because they're not paying. When you go to the IDC, you can see that they're paying all the other bills. They're just not paying yours. So with a debt collector is then able to collect that money on your behalf. That's how we've dealt with the debt issue. On the training part, I will leave that to the DC Director of Communication.
Just to clarify, CIRA doesn't get accreditation. We accredit training providers. So basically anyone, any company that wants to provide training to the various members within the sector, we have to make sure that they follow a proper accreditation process. What we are in the process of, and it's almost somewhere assisting us, is to register as a professional body. This will give us the proper guidance when we develop the appropriate standards for the various occupation that exist within our sector. Because currently, we have not been developing our sector and fulfilling this mandate of professionalizing our sector. So by registering and working with the various members within the industry in developing the occupations of the various segment of our sector, we'll be in a better position to do so and make sure that we don't have fly-by-night training providers and we have the accurate training standard for the various sectors, electronic, the guiding, and other sectors that exist.
I'm just a bit concerned in that your colleague said that people would go and you weren't sure if the training had just been like a holiday, if they knew anything when they came back, if they'd slept through it. So were you previously not using recognized training providers, or are the training providers detailed and accepted so useless that when they come back you still don't know if anybody knows anything?
The training that I was referring to was for our staff. It's under human capital, which is our employees. So what he's talking about is external industry training. So the providers will not be the same, because I'm looking for my staff to be competent in their work, and then she's looking for the industry to be competent. So the levels are not the same. That's where it may be.
Thank you, Chen.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of fire audit, yes, we have received a report from the SAPS for the companies that are licensed by them to possess firearms. Hence, we have been able to develop this indicator KPI of expecting at least 900 companies per year who are in possession of firearms. During our investigations, for example, we would yes come across that this business has closed a long time ago, or it was liquidated, but there were firearms that were issued to it, and it is then that we generated the report to the SAPS to notify them that there are firearms that apparently they are not accounted for. Then we assist them to trace the owners, because the owners are security companies, which security companies are regulated by us, and those firearms will be dealt with them accordingly. On the training on the firearms, on the firearms component of our inspectors, that was done in the previous year, and that is why it is not appearing in our strategic outcomes for our KPI for this particular year. That has been done, but since training is ongoing, obviously if there is new development on that area, we will also ensure that our inspectors are brought up to speed for in that regard. The other question was on the link of the unused firearms by the criminal. That to civil capacity, it will be the response to that will be that the ballistic investigation of used firearms or linked firearms in the criminal commission is the competence of the SAPS. But from experience, because those
Thank you, Chair. On the question of the Levies Act, the Levies Act has been passed, as we all know, that it is an act of law. However, it has not been put into operation. And we have requested the Minister this year that would like to review the Levies Act with the aim of actually ensuring that after it is reviewed, it is put in operation. The review we're looking at, the purpose of the review is to try to align the Levies Act, because it was passed quite a number of years ago, to align it to what is happening currently within the industry in terms of how we collect fees and so on. As you recall, that the Levies Act makes provision for fees to be collected on a monthly basis, and it factors in also issues of the turnover of companies in terms of how do you then determine what fees should be paid by which companies. So those are the things that we will want to align. The current regulations makes provision for fees to be paid on an annual basis. So that's the alignment that we want to bring in terms of the Levies Act. The matter of the building, just to clarify the two aspects, the building in the head office in Centurion, it's still under a lease, and the lease is expiring in 2016. The building in Pretoria is fully owned by CIRA. The process of disposing the building, as I said earlier, that we have petitioned the Minister in terms of the approval, and the outcome of that was that we look into the possibility of constructing a new building within the same site, and we are working closely with the National Treasury in terms of that process. I've also indicated that we haven't had any feedback so far in respect of those areas. The building in Acadia is comprises of three buildings. The main building, which has been condemned, there's two houses which we are currently utilizing as a satellite offices, where we service registration of individuals and other companies. So basically, we're using it as a customer services point from that point. I think that addresses the question. Chairperson, the other question that was asked was the breakdown in terms of the budget. Can I ask that we defer for a few minutes? I just want to compare with the previous 2013 APP so that I can provide the proper response to that.
Well, maybe just to indicate again, in the 12, 13, 14 APP, those items were in and now they're not in. We go then for another round. My two questions, it's also got to do with the targets that was omitted, and especially the financial issues that I've just got a concern, maybe explanation from the acting financial CFO. In the 2012-13 APP, we had included frequency of conducting liquidity plan, cash flow, percentage of achievement of PFA checklist, percentage of surplus deficit budget variance, and also the date for go live of the integrated ERP system. Now, of course, it's a management decision what is the focus, but I'm just concerned of leaving out the PFMA checklist. I think it's important to, even if you're not a National Treasury Funded Department, to have that PFMA checklist as part of your overall financial strategy to ensure good financial governance. So I also want an explanation on that. Why was that deleted? Is there a specific reason for that? And then the call account of 20 million, but who is the call account? And do you tender that out? How do you decide on where the call account goes? And then, we'll go another round for the normal budget and then we'll go to Mona.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. In program 2, this program is your core business. And I see you have removed the appointment of additional inspectors. How do you explain that? And my next question is on the... How do you explain the review of the law enforcement policy and what is its intention? Thank you.
What kind of honor can they move on, Bija?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to know if anyone here has been charged with contravention of the Private Security Industry Levies Act of 2002. Now, you just chose to ignore it. I mean, it's quite the most bizarre situation. If the SAPS, for example, chose to ignore the DNA legislation or any of the legislation that we passed, there would be all hell to pay. I mean, quite bizarre. And yet, as an entity which had its own legislation in terms of the Private Security Industry Levies Act of 2002, you have simply chosen to ignore it. I've never actually met an entity that's chosen to ignore legislation before. I find it utterly bizarre. And now you're saying you want us to now sit down, work through the whole thing again and review it to bring it up to date because you chose to ignore it. I think you're going to have to explain what gave you the right to ignore the legislation as passed by the National Assembly.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see here that the Civil has done a lot of work of awareness campaign program. And when we talk about awareness campaign, it means money. And now I think that quarterly aiding public awareness, blah, 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 blah. And when you evaluate or make assessments, do you find usage of the money here bearing fruit to the awareness programs on the public that you are making aware of what you are doing? I'm talking this because there's value for money in the head but really from principles. Now, do you find yourself making an effective impact on the ground?
Right. Before you answer, I just want to also on the staff establishment. I think the indication is you've got a group establishment of 278. I think what's going to be very important for us also as a committee going forward, if the new act is signed, your new focus areas, what is your establishment, the head office, within the regional and satellite offices? It's not included in the information so that we can get a picture. Post levels, Honourable Twala said he saw a lot of unregulated security of private security offices in Gauteng. So we just want to have also a view, an overall view. What is the view? What is your personal strength in the country? So that we can also look at what is the strength of those private security organizations countrywide, that if it matches with the environment you operate in. So we can get that right, that's fine. But maybe just a brief indication of what is your staff establishment looking like countrywide. We'll take these questions, then we'll go for another round on program 192.
Okay, on the question of the removal of the electricity issues and the barriers, is because the barriers report is part of your monthly and quarterly reporting. So when you do the ATP, the instruction is that you must look at forward looking. So whether the organization is looking at something that we have to do weekly to make sure that we've got enough money on a monthly basis to carry on with the business. So it wasn't seen as prudent to put it as a 3-year target because it's something that you're supposed to be monitoring. So your variance report basically tells you how far you are from your budget and you compare actual to your budget. So it's part of your monthly report, you report on that. But last year, January came up with a new instruction to say, as part of our quarterly report, there are certain elements that must be shown in the quarterly report. So if you take the quarterly report of last year, you start to see all that information in there. So it wasn't deemed as something that you put as a stretch target for 3 years. So you wouldn't have met the smart tracking board as we removed it and kept it in the quarterly report. So is the PSMA checklist. So now when we submit to the minister, we have to give them our compliance checklist to say, on a quarterly basis, how far we, so it wouldn't have been deemed as part of your stretch target. That's why it was taken out. But I mean, we can provide you with the quarterly report so you can see that it was actually factored in there. So it just moved.
main bank account is with Nedbank, the call account is with Nedbank. The process of government entities in opening bank accounts is that you write it into Treasury, and Treasury approves the bank that you likely to go with. And then that's basically the process that was followed with regard to that. So I'll hand it over to Sam for the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps also to clarify the issue of the call account. It is the same investment account that was referred to previously by the previous committee. So that's the same. The other question was, has anyone, the issue about the Levies Act, I think it is important to note that although the Levies Act was an act of law, it has not yet been put into operation. And at the time that we embarked on the turnaround strategy, it would have been a quite a lengthy process to put the Levies Act in process into action at the time to effect the turnaround. So we concentrated on utilizing the existing legislation to try to reduce the fees. Hence, we're saying that since that time, the Levies Act became an act of law, there has been a lot of changes that took place in the industry. So we'd like to align the Levies Act with that. If you also look into the act that the bill that was processed by Parliament last year, there will be a variance between it and the current Levies Act. So we need to bring that Levies Act in line with what the bill is saying, so that by the time it comes into effect, there is harmony between the two legislations. We have, I think I've answered the question that we have not actually ignored it. We used to utilize existing legislation. I think let me hand over to my colleagues for the other question.
Thank you, Chair. The removal of the appointment of an additional inspector, this target was there, I think, on 12 target. The target was that 10 additional inspectors were to be appointed. Yes, 10 additional inspectors were appointed, but we came to a stage after the case in question that has been mentioned before, where we wanted to increase the fees. One of the objectives was to get more funds so that we could increase our human resources in terms of inspectors and regulation. So we realized that the problem that budgeting on the unforeseen, on a yet unforeseen outcome to add more inspectors might be a bit of a challenge, because we don't know which side the court will do, even though we know the merits, but the judge is the judge to pronounce on the issue. On the review of the police, if I can go just step back on where we're coming from in terms of our enforcement police. We were in the past concentrating primarily on businesses to ensure that there is compliance. And in the process of doing that, we realized that there is also non-compliance on the part of the security officers. And we also realized that some of the non-compliance can be identified through the inspection of the individual security officers. Hence, we changed our enforcement strategy to now include the inspection of the security officers. It is out of that exercise, Chairperson and Honorable Members, that from the number of about 398,000 active security officers, which we believed they were in our system, we came up at the current about 485,000 active security officers in the company. So the companies were underreporting, but with the implementation of this new strategy of inspecting the individuals, we identified that. As an ongoing, we will review that on annual basis to see if we can't come up with innovations to maximize
I just wanted to, with the staff question that was raised, with regards to the total establishment of Stira, Stira has an approved establishment of 291 positions, with 217 positions filled. So in the various provinces, as that was the question, in Polokwane we have filled four vacancies, we've got one for Etlina and also in Nelspruit. In Mthatha, we've got eight positions, we filled six, we're missing one walk-in consultant. In Durban, we've got 31 approved positions, we filled 18, so we've got 13 vacancies in Durban. The vacancies in Durban is senior inspectors times two, inspectors times six, one prosecutor, secretary, deputy captain, and business unit administrator. In PE, we've got 11 positions, of which eight are filled, so we've got three vacancies. The vacancies is one is for a branch supervisor, one prosecutor, and a cleaner. In Cape Town, we've got 25 approved positions, 18 are filled, and 7 vacancies. Of the 7, 5 are inspectors, 1 legal typist, and 1 front desk clerk. And basically, the question was in the province of what's happening. Then I can answer more questions. Northern Cape branch is covered by our Mthatha office, because we used to have an office in Kokstad, which we then moved to Mthatha. So you've got PE and Mthatha dealing with the entire region.
Maybe let's get in writing, because that's an issue we must interrogate going further. You know, all the 9 provinces are effectively covered, and you know, all those issues, and then maybe even forward planning as well. Thanks. Director, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just wanted to address the question of the budget that is not reflected on the APP. On the APP that is published, it is in the what we omitted it on the presentation itself. We thought perhaps that we can deal with that as part of the medium-term budget aspect. Thank you.
In responding to the question about the awareness and whether we're getting value for money, I think what is key to address is the fact that the awareness campaign, our target for the past financial year was 12 awareness campaign. However, what we've done is to go beyond the 12 awareness campaign, because we clearly define what is it that we want to say to who and the key messages that we want to address in those target market. And what we have done was to do awareness campaign specifically for security officers, because we realized that, you know, when we're going through the registration process and also the inspections that were conducted, there were non-compliance issues. And we started empowering them with the relevant issues that are key for them, over and above the issue of how they get the whole protection that the security officers are entitled to, and who they get access to, because everybody thought that CISA can just protect them, but you know, to sort of say there are various role players involved. There's a CCMA, there's a Department of Labor. What are the different role players are supposed to be doing, and how do you access them? And the businesses, looking at the code of conduct, we emphasize matters around the code of conduct and the sectorial determination issues. We empower them. I think we conducted about over 33 workshops last year for security officers and security businesses, just to empower them on key code of conduct matters. Now, coming to the public, now indicating to the public that you have to deal with a registered security service provider, that puts pressure to sort of now start in question. Hence, we started, you know, getting more engagement from the companies like the post office, saying, you know, we've seen this information about what is it that needs to happen, and we're experiencing problems. How do we partner with you as a regulator so that you guide us in terms of how we should acquire the service providers? We also engage with NAMA, the National Association of Managing Agents. They procure security service providers on behalf of businesses, complexes, and the residential areas. So we said, these are the key things that you need to do, and they can cascade that information to the direct consumers. And when you look at the current strategic plan, when we do public awareness, it's not just about the general public. We say consumers, of this private security service, what is it that we want to say, and how they should protect themselves. The public, introducing the sector as a whole to them. What is the sector all about? What are the employment opportunities that exist? How do they access those employment opportunities? But in a nutshell, in terms of value for money, our registration turnaround has improved from 180 to 19 days. That shows that people, when they come, they don't ask questions. They come with the relevant information that help us to bring efficiencies when we do registration.
I want to move on to the next section. If there's urgent questions, we can do that at the end. Let's do the last two sections, presentations.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to Program 3, the overview, the responsibility of this program is to provide effective stakeholder management to ensure that training standards are adhered to, and also bring efficiency when it comes to the registration of the sector. We have four sub-programs that are within Program 3, one being communication and stakeholder management, the second one being industry registration, third sub-program, the industry training, and the fourth one being industry research and development. The strategic goal number one, stakeholder and customer relations management and industry stewardship. The strategic objective, promoting awareness among the public and the private security industry on the function and the role of CIRA in the industry. Our strategic outcome one is increased awareness of the function and the role of CIRA. As earlier indicated, the first key KPI is the public awareness program. What we have done with that is to segment and say from the public, what is it that we want to say to the general public by introducing the sector to them and the job opportunities that exist, over and above educating the end consumer who are consuming the private security services. The second key indicator is the public awareness program on the role of CIRA, specifically focusing on the security officers, because we realize that in order for us to emphasize, in order for us to achieve compliance within the sector, the very same people who are providing a service of security must be empowered about the new rules or the rules of engagement so that they can comply to the TPO's rules and regulations. This also complies with the functions, the key KPI number three, which focuses on public awareness for security officers. When we're saying that both businesses, when you look at the two KPIs, both businesses and security officers must comply with the code of conduct, and for them to comply with that, they need a proper understanding of what are the rules of engagement, because so we're saying some would be engaged with them, they're not aware of the rules of engagement. And then moving to strategic outcome number two, increase efficiency of resolving consumer complaints. What we have also done is to sit down and say that we really want to, when we're focusing on being a customer-centric organization, we want to make sure that all our customer complaints are resolved appropriately within a short space of time, without having a situation where people go back and forth with a complaint. So we've set a turnaround time from the target is to achieve a 24-hour turnaround time for customer complaint. So you'll find complaints that can, you know, be received immediately and working, and those that can come through via the call center, and we have set a target of resolving those complaints within 24 hours. And the big question might be, how are you going to monitor that? We have just installed a process that will ensure that we monitor complaints that are received within every day, every time when calls are received, which one are resolved within an hour, 2 hours, a day, and so on. And then the third strategic outcome is increased protection and enforcement of private security industry personnel's rights. The KPI there is a number of awareness program on sectorial determination. Like I've earlier mentioned that last year we did, when we were doing awareness campaign, we realized that there's a big loophole around that. Hence, we have now specific
awareness campaign targeting at that, because annually the sectoral determination is reviewed by the Department of Labor, and we need to make sure that the industry is aware of what is happening in there. The number of formalized partnerships with employee-based stakeholders, what we're referring to in this aspect is people tend to focus our role in the Department of Labor, and sometimes things that have to go to labor end up with here. But over and above that, we can't just say it's a Department of Labor issue. We need to agree on a working process that will ensure at the end of the day our stakeholders' challenges are resolved. Hence the MOU with a key partner or state organ will be entered into to make sure that we don't just leave things hanging, but all issues are addressed appropriately. And then, the fourth strategic outcome is increased compliance to minimum professional standards in training of security service providers. Last year we developed, in the last financial year, we developed a policy that clearly defined what is our position as a regulator going forward as far as industry training is concerned. If I may brief members of the portfolio committee, that we had placed a moratorium where we were saying that we will no longer register security service and training service providers who are providing training on grades, because if it's a national framework, everybody's playing in that. And if you're talking about professionalizing the sector, you can't be talking about grades that cannot be recognized when people want to go and further their education, be it with other tertiary institutions. So the entry-level qualification framework is the way to go if we want to really professionalize our sector and develop the right occupational standard for our sector. So the key KPI there is the implementation of the training curriculum that was developed. And this will be done in partnership with the stakeholders like your SAFITA, SAFA, and KISCHIO. Another KPI is the percentage of accredited training SSP complies with the minimum professional standards. What we've also picked up is that you've got training service providers who are registered with SAFITA. You've got training service providers who are still within the old framework registered with us. Currently, training providers registered with us amounts to 421, and with SAFITA you have 1,432. So, what we've done, integration of database to ensure that not only do we inspect for compliance our training providers that are registered with CIRA, but we also inspect for compliance training providers that are registered with SAFITA, because that's where SAFITA was lacking, and issues of training provider registered. But when you go to inspect, there's no facility, they're operating from a different environment than the environment that was originally approved. The establishment of a training compliance forum. This, what we're trying to achieve with this is that when we're
sorry to stop you there. Okay. If we can, we're going to run a series out of time. If we've got a broad explanation, you know, if there's clarity, members can raise it. But I think it's straightforward. What are the issues you can just away? Thanks.
Another key thing is compliance training, the establishment of training compliance forum. The other one is the number of capacity building activities for SSS for security service providers. Okay. And then under effective and efficient registration process, we've got average turnaround time, which is still part of a critical aspect of the efficiencies around our turnaround time. Research and support, which is critical to what we're doing. We can't really regulate an industry that we don't continue to research and understand the advancements that are taking place. So we have an indicator of number of research topics that we want to achieve for this financial year, and over the survey to assess customer satisfaction, stakeholder satisfaction, so that we are certain that whatever that we do is aligned to the expectations of the industry out there.
Thank you very much. I wanted to suggest that we the Deputy Director of Finance do the budget as well.
Okay, with regards to the budget, I'm just going to skip on the narrative and just give them a bit to stay calm. Basically, on this slide, we're just trying to show you the historic baseline, basically the baseline we're using to determine the budget for the next 3 years. We're doing the same for the expenditure. The other one was on the revenue. This is for the expenditure. And then this is, on this slide, is basically the basis on which the baseline was determined. And then from this slide, we're trying now to break down what makes up the revenue. You see that we've got annual fees sitting at projected 60 million, 64 2015 and 16, and 68, 16, 17, and a breakdown of other revenue elements that are core to Sierra. I just wanted to break down the other income so that members are clear. That will be made up of fines, your interest received, and grant received. That will make up our other income. And then under the program, under administration, you've got expenditure of 91 in 2014-15, 95 and 102 for 16-17, and then reinforcement is at 60, 66-70, and communication 16-17 and 19. And then next slide, I'm basically showing how the percentage allocation of the budget, showing that administration sits with 54% of the budget, and law enforcement 86% and 10%. And then now I'll break it down further. Now looking at the budget from an economic classification perspective, compensation of employees, administration has 29 million. This is only for 14-15. I didn't put the slide for the year going forward. So compensation of employees, you see that law enforcement sits with the bulk of the compensation budget because of the number of people that they employ. And then repairs and maintenance, one might ask why this administration sit with this, but basically if you consider the fact that we sit in the various offices and we've got servers and stuff like that, we consistently have to repair and maintain the servers and printers and all other equipment that we use. Travel and subsistency, law enforcement sits with the bulk of that budget because inspectors have to travel fine wide to cover the industry as a whole, hence they sit with 3.6 million. And then lease, the majority sits in administration because majority of that is the office in Acadia and the two offices in Bulawayo and Mill Street, and then law enforcement remain have the other offices that they responsible for. And then consultancy, the majority will obviously be in administration because you know that the internal audit division is outsourced, so you get that. And then the maintenance of the IT system is also done by an external party. So that's why the bulk of the budget sits under administration. And then the fingerprint cost sits in communication because the registration is done there. That is to verify the registration through the registration process. They need to incur that cost to ensure that they register people who don't have criminal records. So to ensure that they have to incur the cost. And then a breakdown of what makes up the other operating expenses because it's quite a huge chunk. In there you find audit fees of 2.5 million, office equipment fees of 1.2 million. Printing and stationery, considering the fact that we print loads and loads of certificates, we've got 2.8 million. Security services for all the offices that we occupy, 4 million. Telephone services for all the offices, about 5.4. Water lines and levies is about 3 million. And then insurance at 1.2. And then depreciation of all our assets at 2.4. And that is the biggest chunk of that. you roughly where that figure would be coming from. Okay? And then this is just a breakdown of the programs to show you where there's been increases and decreases. I don't think with the time constraint I should go through it, but basically the slide tries to explain where we have increased elements so that you can see there's a correlation between an increase in one aspect over the other. And then the same is done for program 2, and the same is done for program 3, and that completes my presentation. Okay, questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? Honourable Molobatsi? Honourable Mbele?
Yes, yes. I know for a fact in the past, just the bill that was just passed, where we were talking about security uniforms that look almost the same as SAPS uniforms. And there was also an issue of emblems and insignia. Have you started working on that? My next question is, what is the budget for your vehicle? And why is it not included in the capital expenditure budget? And then it takes us to the next question. Don't you intend procuring additional vehicles? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I have two questions. The one is just for some clarity and elaboration on the performance indicator on awareness programs in Sephora determination. Just to understand the context of that and the content of that. And the second was in relation to the fingerprinting function. Can I just get another review of what that entails? Because I'm just curious if you can also answer, if it's a relevant question, if that fingerprinting system is in sync and integrated with the other electronic databases that relate to the criminal justice system. Thank you.
Honourable Kodabana.
Thank you. You just used the number of, I thought it was active security officers in the country, it's 485,000. Please just tell me if I put that down correctly, if that's active security officers. Could you also tell me how many private security companies there actually are in the country, registered, but how many are operational? You know, we have this thing of huge number registered, but actually only X number operational. I think it's pretty much the same, a huge number of security officers registered, a smaller number. So if you could just clarify those numbers for me, please.
Thank you. Sira?
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chair. On the issue of the awareness on sectoral determination, one of the work area of labor exploitation security industries around the issue of wages. The wages are determined by the Minister of Labour through Sectoral Determination 6 in terms of the basic conditions of employment. That is the document that is sent to the industry for compliance with it. In creating awareness with the industry, we at times, most cases, join hands with the Department of Labour, where we want to make it clear to the industry that, in fact, the core mandate of wages is with the Department of Labor. We can only enforce the law insofar as to ensure that the service provider, being the business, complies with sectoral determination. But where it has been found that there has been breach, for example, if the security officer wants to be reinstituted for a back pay, then the restitutionary powers are with the Department of Labor. The same issue with the Provident Fund. The security officers will be coming to us in relation to say, to Provident Fund. And with the joint outreach with the Department of Labor, we have achieved the effectiveness in that area, in that the security officer out there now knows where to go, which department to go for what, and in the process of that, the turnaround for the solving of his problem is shortened, rather than coming to Sierra, who then will refer the matter to the Department of Labor for restitution or for Provident Fund, and then it takes time to the aggrieved victim. I will leave the issue of the registration to my colleague. And the issue of fingerprints. Fingerprints, we have, as Sierra was classified as a commercial, we have our fingerprints verified through our intermediary, which is IDECO. We send our fingerprints to IDECO, who has got the access to the criminal justice in between the form of a criminal record center, central criminal record center by the police. That is where they know reports of whether our applicant has previous convictions or not. And in the event when the applicant has got previous conviction, SAPS will revert to IDECO, then IDECO will give result to us, and then we make decision on that particular outcome, which in most cases, when if the conviction is within the period of 10 years prior to the date of application, such application is rejected.
In terms of registration statistics, we have over 1.8 million registered security officers, but in terms of actively employed, we have over 485,000 active registered security officers. And when it comes to the businesses, we have over 25,000 registered businesses and over 8,100 active businesses registered with us.
Thank you very much. Any further questions from members? Right, thank you very much. We've come to the end of this interaction with Sierra. Sorry. Honourable Morabati's questions.
I think the question was whether there is a capital budget, Chair. There is indeed a capital budget, which unfortunately we didn't include in this slide. However, we plan to buy one vehicle to replace the existing. There's only one vehicle that we are utilizing for post office collection of matters that relates to administration. The reason we our current inspectors are utilizing their own vehicles to conduct inspections. Thank you, Chair. Apologies. The issue of law enforcement in respect of the uniforms and the emblems, we are dealing with that, Chair. We are very aggressive. When we identify companies that are utilizing uniforms that are similar to that of the army or the police, we take them on board, and we in other areas we prosecute them, in other areas we inform them to change those uniforms within a specific time frame. We are currently also working in the KwaZulu-Natal area with a program to address that very same aspect as well. Thank you, Chair.
Klaus Beit, Chairman.
Yeah, I just want some clarity. Right at the beginning, you said that the issue of the consultants had been resolved. Now, I just wanted to know what you spent on consultants last year and what you've spent this year. So that will tell me how it's been resolved. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe just to indicate, Honourable Karabana, if you indicate that they must give us a written report in the next 2 weeks on those issues. So thank you very much for the presentation by Sierra. There's indeed progress, I think, if we compare it to the next year, although it's a new committee. But quite importantly, we will come to Pretoria on the 19th of August, on a Tuesday afternoon. And then the portfolio view from them on the oversight and financial affairs of the institution. But then secondly, to deal with, we want to get a briefing on your roadmap for the implementation of the new act. Because I don't get a feel for that in the APP, and we need to know, are you ready to implement the new act if it's signed off by the president? And also in terms of the future challenges in your field, are you ready to deal with them? And I think at that occasion we will also deal with those questions we didn't have time for today. So members are very much welcome, because we will only compile a report on CIRA after that engagement on the 19th. So if there's any outstanding questions from members, we will deal with those questions in Pretoria. So that is more or less the planning going forward. So thank you very much for CIRA, the chairperson, and